Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Hi guys, welcome to Onceable, Hypeable's Once Upon a Time podcast. Brittany here, as you may have noticed. Due to a technical glitch on this week's episode, I'm filling in for the intro, and Jen will pick up our actual recording in a little bit. On the podcast this week, we have Laura, Kristen, Jen, and myself to discuss this week's episode 17, Best Laid Plans. We'll begin with our thumbs up, thumbs down. Kristen's unfortunately got cut off in our recording, but she was so kind to write down her thoughts, and I'll reread them here. A technical error stole my thumbs up or thumbs down from this week's episode's audio track, but no worries. Here's my initial reaction to Once Upon a Time Season 4, Episode 17. This episode is definitely a thumbs up for me, just not way, way up. I'm happy to get some answers regarding what exactly the Charmings were up to all those years ago with Maleficent's baby, and it was nice to get some nice progress on the author's storyline as well. Definitely a solid episode. Thanks, Kristen. Now we return to your regularly scheduled programming.
Okay. Laura, how about you? How did you feel about it?
Definitely a thumbs up for me too. I felt like this episode had a really super pace to it. I felt like everything just like moved forward. You could feel that there were very high stakes involved on very many levels. Really loved it. I also loved the whole bit with like Henry. I felt like Henry was in legit danger for the first time in a really long time. And I don't know where I love Henry torture, but I did sincerely love that Henry was in jeopardy. But yeah, no, big thumbs up for me.
Okay. And Brittany?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with thumbs up as well. I like where we're going with everything this season so far. And I like how there were a lot of questions answered. Like how Cruella and Ursula got to our world and why they were stuck there for so much longer than everyone else. And I like that Snow and Charming aren't perfect. I'm really enjoying that. So, yeah, I'd give it a thumbs up.
Yeah, I think it was a thumbs up, too. I felt like there was at least a lot happening in this episode where we kind of got somewhere. As like where in the past, like a couple of the episodes, we haven't really moved forward, but this definitely had a lot going for it. I love the bits with Snow and Charming. I like the parts with the author. I did like the Henry stuff too, Laura, but not necessarily because he was in danger, but just because I think the storybook is so inherently something that belongs to Henry that he needs to be very much involved in this storyline. So I think that's why I liked it so much, was it kind of brings it back to where it all began with the storybook. So let's see. All right, let's talk about some of our favorite quotes, because there were definitely a couple in this episode. Mine is from Henry, and he says, you can't just unsavior the savior. And I thought that was kind of a funny line when they're discussing how Gold wants to make Emma bad. Brittany, why don't you go ahead and give us yours?
Okay, so mine, finally, for the first time since we've come back, is a line from Hook, and it's when he's getting all jealous of August, and he says, though I do know you're partial to men in leather jackets. And I love that because August has his like cool biker jacket.
Yeah.
But Hook has his better pirate jacket.
It's all about the leather jacket. All right, Laura, go ahead.
Mine is colder than a witch's, and it gets cut off. I just loved it. I was like, are they really going to swear on Once Upon a Time? Because I knew how that one ended. And then when it got cut off, I was like, oh, you got me. So I laughed at that because I thought they were going to say something that they weren't going to. And anyway, it just made me laugh.
It was, yeah. I was like, oh, that's not okay. And
yeah.
Then he said foot or something. So
yeah, and then just swallowed it when he saw Snow. So I was like, okay, I gotcha. I thought it was clever.
All right, and Kristen, how about you?
Yeah, mine's from, like, right after Maleficent made Regina, like, fall asleep, and Cruella's talking about, like, just killing her right there, and she goes, if it's too messy for you, darling, Mal can incinerate her. Just hit me at the right time. I was like, that is fabulous.
Yeah, there was one with Regina, too, when they were going after Henry, and there was something about the only thing you'll be feeling is my fireballs, or something, like, it was, she was sastastic. I was like, whoa. So I enjoyed those too. All right, so let's get into talk about the episode because there's a lot going on in this episode, both in the past and in the present. So let's kind of hit all of the past stuff first. So the episode starts in the past, and it starts with Snow and Charming going to see a unicorn, because evidently if you touch a unicorn's horn, it will allow you to see the future of your child. Who knew? Magical creatures that they are. And Charming sees Emma being just fine, and Snow sees Emma ripping out her heart and wanting to kill her. So, we have these two conflicting futures that they see, and on their way back to their castle, they run into some man who's peddling wares, and Charming helps him, and he's kind to him, and he gives him some, I think it's brandy to drink, and the man...
Brandy with nutmeg. Let us not forget the important
It's all
nutmeg.
About the nutmeg, right? Everything's got to have nutmeg in it in Storybrooke. I have no idea.
We moved on from cinnamon to nutmeg now.
Yeah. All those lovely winter spices, what can I say?
Yeah.
That he sends them, you know, don't go that way. Maleficent's there, and she's laid an egg. She's turned herself into a dragon and laid an egg. I can't even. And they should go around, and they should go visit this man at the cottage. So Snow and Charming kind of head off to the cottage, and when they arrive at the cottage, it's the sorcerer's apprentice. So we hit all that stuff. What did you guys think about that? Did you know that the peddler was going to be the author?
You know, I was really curious why his casting was such a big deal. Because, like, when his casting announcement came out, like, he had a role in Mad Men, like, a little while. But when his casting came out, I was like, why is this pet, like, what is the importance of this peddler? And then I saw his role, like, tonight in the beginning, and I was like, oh, this, all that for that? Like, that was ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I wrote an article and a casting announcement on that.
Yeah, right. See, I thought he was the sorcerer. I didn't think he was necessarily the author, because for some reason in my head, the author and the sorcerer are kind of one and the same. And I don't know why that is, but they were. They kind of just melded into one because there are these two kind of unknown factors. So I thought he was the sorcerer at first. I didn't think he was the... And I guess it goes back to all of that, like, fairy tale, you know, like in Beauty and the Beast, when he's not nice to the witch in the beginning, and then so she turns into the witch and, you know, gives him a hard time. These two were nice to him, so in turn, he's trying to pay them a kindness by sending them to the apprentice. That was where my mind was at.
See, for some reason, I thought he was, like, Maleficent or Gold or someone and was trying to send them into trouble. And so I got really nervous. So I had, like, the opposite reaction, like, from you and, like, the sorceress and all that. Like, I was worried. So I was happier how it worked out than what I thought was happening.
Yeah. I mean, I knew he was, I've seen him in other things, and it just struck me that he wouldn't just be, you know, the happy roadside peddler unless it was going to pay off as a bigger part. So I was pretty sure he was going to be something big. I don't know that I specifically thought it would be the author until, once the sorcerer's apprentice got to the point where he was explaining, like, what... Back that up. Just before August started explaining how there were many authors and things like that, that's when I'm like, oh, I know who it is. Like, that's the point where I decided that that's who it was.
Okay. So, from there, they meet up with the sorcerer's apprentice, and they start to talk about what they need to do to protect Emma. They're basically their unborn child. So it kind of comes about that if they have another vessel to put the evil in, then that's all that matters. And they can take it away from Emma and put it in this other vessel, and they don't have to worry about it. But he can't just take it because magic has a price. So Snow decides that it'd be an awesome idea to go steal Maleficent's egg, a.k.a. child. So they go and they steal the egg. And Maleficent, you guys, can we just talk about Maleficent in this moment? Because she is so, like, vulnerable and trying not to pick a fight, just trying to be like, my child, don't take my child. And my heart broke for her quite a bit in that moment. It was sad.
Yeah, I had a really hard time with Snow, like, picking up the egg, which is a baby, which is a creature. Like, to me, even if it wasn't a human baby, it was, like, a living creature. I had a really hard time with Snow being willing to do this all to this living creature. I didn't have a it wasn't problematic for me for Snow to pick it up and use it as a shield and be like, hey, I'm going to walk out of here, or you're going to roast your own kid. I didn't have so much a problem with that, but I did really have a problem with, like, Snow being like, oh, I don't care, let's make the dragon baby evil. Because that seemed like such a good idea, too, because I really want an evil dragon baby, don't you?
Doesn't everybody?
I was a little perturbed that they didn't notice the tail. I was looking at the tail like, wrapped around it, and I'm like, sitting be in careful. The yeah, I was like, be careful. That's, like, that's a tail. Like, hello. And they just, like, walked right up to it. I was like, okay.
Yeah, but did you guys think that, like, the scene where they're sitting with the Sorcerer's Apprentice, and he's like, I'll give you 2 a minute. I'm like, that is, like, the worst parenting counseling, like, meeting I've ever seen in my life. It's like, he sits down, he's like, here are your options. Now you can steal a child and put evil on it, and then your child will be fine. Or you can kind of just let it go, you know, see how things work out, nurture love, but it's up to you.
Right, the whole, well, that was what drove me crazy, the whole nature versus nurture thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, couldn't you just trust enough that you probably would have done a good enough job that maybe the kid isn't going to sign up for sainthood? But I think I would have a really hard time if the child of Snow White and Prince Charming turned into a psycho killer. I mean, it doesn't seem too likely unless there was just something, you know, horrendously genetically wrong. But
yeah, it came back to bite them later because she was like so upset when she was in the nursery. And she's like, well, if we don't get our act together, like, our kid's still going to be messed up because we're going to be depressed all the time.
And then I was trying to remember when they found out that she was going to be the savior, because I was like, if she's going to be the savior, then there's probably a good chance that she's not going to turn out evil. Like, you can't just unsavior the savior. Like, in my head, I'm going, if she's meant to save you, she's probably not going to turn out to be this horrible, evil thing. So give her a chance. Like, that was, that's what was playing through my head.
And the level of paranoia is, like, off the charts. Like, I don't think there's anybody who just, at least that we've seen, we haven't seen anybody just suddenly be evil without, like, horrendous extenuating circumstances, right? So what's there to think that somebody would be horrifically evil without, like, ridiculous extenuating circumstances, which you just don't feel like their kid would hit?
Yeah, right, because villains are made, not born.
Right, and the thing is that they didn't know beforehand that she was the savior, because when he starts, like, giving the talk as he's changing the magic over into the egg, he says, and into foreign lands and distant shores. And he looks at Snow White and says, what does that mean? So they don't know about the curse yet. This is pre-curse knowledge.
Yeah, they just know the threat was that, like, Maleficent told them that Regina had a curse, but they never knew what the curse would do.
Right, they don't understand it yet.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes it a little easier to swallow. It was making me nervous before,
So we see him do this, you know, the magic, and as he's doing it, the shell breaks open and a baby's hand comes out of the egg, which, I'm sorry, babies and eggs, I'm a little confused because that's not how it works here.
Well, Maleficent also just changed into a dragon in order to have a kid. So
yeah, like, which,
you know,
again,
this is probably easier for me.
Very weird. I know, she doesn't want to lose her shapely figure. I don't know.
Can I just tell you, my inner 13-year-old boy just wanted somebody to just say, hey, she laid an egg, and just to keep going with that phrase. I mean, it is so ridiculous, but, like, my inner 13-year-old middle schooler wanted, like, somebody to say that and then snicker.
Yeah, so I don't know. It was very strange. And for some reason, Ursula and Cruella are the ones that come after Snow and Charming to get the egg back. And as they come after them, even though Snow and Charming realize what they've done is wrong and they're trying to take the egg back to bring it back to Maleficent, because all along they said, oh, well, we'll bring it back to you. Now, I want to just talk for a minute about the maybe not so brightness of, I'm going to go put all this evil into this little egg, and then I'm going to give it back to you, evil dragon lady Maleficent. And then you can do what you want with it. Did any
that was
because yeah, then so she has like this little evil minion that she could just constantly send after Snow and Charming for the rest of their lives.
Right, because the lady who turns into a dragon and breathes fire and you kidnap her kid is going to be so rational. Yes, it was like really Charming's bad decision making.
One of the most feared like sorceresses of, you know, basically most stories in fairy tale land, and they're giving her one of the most evil offspring ever. Like, that's probably not the smartest plan.
No. Although, actually, I mean, we're going to get there, but clearly, like, Emma is part of the bad decision-making, too. I mean, there were several colossal, horrendous decisions made, I think, this episode, and this was just one of them.
Yeah, so from there, the egg gets sucked through a portal, and along with it, Cruella and Ursula. So we now know that the egg has gone through the portal, along with our two villains. And that's where they've been the whole time, is living in our world. Now, at which point in time did you guys realize that the little egg named Lilith was going to be Emma's friend?
I mean, like, as soon as... Well... Like, I knew Lily was going to be the Maleficent's kid since Maleficent was like, I have a bone to pick with you about a child. And I'm like, well, there it is.
Yeah. And I think all along when we watched that episode, we're like, okay, no, we don't just introduce this girl for no reason. Like, she's got to have a reason. Like, it just seemed too, I don't know, easy.
Plus, she has, like, a purple star birthmark.
Right. She has that, remember the birthmark? We, like, stopped it and stared at it for a while. Yeah. But here's the odd thing. Did she seem evil to you?
No, she seemed mischievous. She seemed spoiled. But I wouldn't classify her as evil. Maybe self-centered, but...
Yeah.
I mean, half the teenage population is somewhat self-centered. I certainly wouldn't categorize them as evil. Maybe immature at best, but...
Yeah, because I think they were saying that they put all this evil magic in her, but they had to put her in a place where that would never come out. So I think if she gets into Storybrooke, she's going to have a lot of magic that she doesn't know what to do with because she's never used it before.
Interesting. So that'll be really interesting to see how that plays out. All right, so moving into the present. In the present, it starts off with August becoming ill, and I have to say, I was really sad. I was very confused. I was like, wait, we just got him back. Isn't he going to stay for a little while longer?
Get him to the sorcerers? Did they, like, poof him there? Because, like, he was in the loft. And now, then the next scene, they're, like, sitting in the Sorcerer's Mansion, like, hey, August, how are you feeling in this bed?
Yeah, they took him to the Blue Fairy.
Yeah. They got a... Yeah, she magicked him there. They got a gurney. wheeled the little wooden man across town. Who knows?
Just floated him on a gurney like they did, like McGonagall did.
You know what I'm having a hard time with, though? That, like, Geppetto hasn't come by. Is anyone else having a really hard time?
Is he still just under a sleeping spell in his shed?
Oh, maybe he is.
That's where he was when we left him.
Well, surely someone has thought to go see if he's okay, or someone has thought, oh, we may have to let him know that he doesn't have a little wooden boy anymore. Like, you know, I'm just like, Geppetto, like somebody, I don't know. I just feel like Geppetto should be in on all of this, because if they can't get him to go back the other way, they're going to have a lot of explaining to do to Geppetto.
Yeah, this ought to be super interesting. So I guess that is another big question. What becomes of August? Does he get to remain August, or does he go back to being a little boy? And right. I think that this is important, because as we get further into the show, Hook kind of reveals that he's jealous of August. So who sees the love triangle coming on? Anyone? Anyone?
I do, but here's my question. Now, Emma says she's not interested in August, and I do genuinely believe that at this point. I'm just not so sure the reverse is true. Isn't true. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no, I get it.
I'm with you. I think August has a little soft spot for Emma. Like, just the sheer, like, joy on his face when he realizes that she's fully embraced all of this, like later on in the episode.
Yeah.
Just that alone was enough for me to think, yeah, he's not going to be so easy to just get rid of.
And when she walks in the room and he's like, hey.
Yes. Like, oh.
He's got the heart emoji eyes. Like,
oh my God. there need to be like, hey girl memes. Yeah. Like, with him. They really do.
It's like,
oh,
he's like
gosh,
staring at Mary, Margaret, and David like, uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. Oh, hey.
Yeah, they were. That whole scene, I was like, there are shippers right now that are doing this. I can feel it. I can feel the ship coming on.
I think it was also highlighted when Hook's jealousy kind of came out about it. I think that was what made me kind of be like, oh, and stop and think about it. Otherwise, I wouldn't necessarily have thought about it until Hook was a little like, well,
and
you
I
know.
I was so glad that that scene happened. Because I was hoping, like, it didn't get dragged out where he's, like, sulking and, like, getting angrier and angrier. But he was, like, upfront about it. He was like, so this guy that you kind of sort of knew back when I was just in the book and you didn't believe I existed, what's the deal with him?
It was pretty good. All right, so then a lot of the story focuses on the page with the door on it because we know that it's very, very important. And Henry has it. Emma makes a duplicate of it just to kind of try and keep everyone safe and so that the villains can't take it. So when Regina comes to get the page, she can't take the actual page because Emma's really kind of nervous about that. So Regina takes a photograph of the page and says, you know, this will be enough. We can make it work. It'll buy me some time. So she goes back, Henry holds on to both of the pages, and Snow goes a little crazy at this point. Like, Snow literally goes off her rocker with this whole, like, situation. She's determined to protect Emma, like, she's acting really weird. So both in the past and in the present, Snow's a little cray-cray. Like, that's how it came across. So I don't know what you guys thought about Snow.
Well, and David loses his grip for a minute there, too.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, you both are having, like, a real problem with grasping what you really should be doing right now.
Well, you know what's so funny, too? Because my husband does watch the show with me. Again, now that Frozen is over, he's happy to watch it again. And he's literally yelling at the television at this point, or you could just tell her the truth. Or then again, you could just tell her the truth. She's an adult.
I see this happening right now. I see it in my head. Kevin sitting there yelling at the TV.
Yeah. And he's going, he goes, she's an adult. Why don't you, oh, I don't know, just tell her the truth. I mean, it was kind of funny as he's going on about it.
Oh my goodness. So we have that moment, which was kind of, I don't know, it just, Snow was so weird in this episode.
Why did she just skulk off? Like, you know, okay, so this scene really annoyed me when Hook tells Emma, like, listen, they're going to try and turn your heart to darkness. And then it cuts to Mary Margaret whispering about their dark secret 2 feet away from Emma to David. I was like, she can hear you.
Yeah,
like, she could easily hear you. And then she just storms off, but they never actually went anywhere. Like, where were they going?
Not a clue, because they don't know what they're doing. They have no idea. They just know that they're wrong. So Maleficent, being Maleficent, decides she's going to put a sleeping curse on the whole town, hence another lovely purple smoke monster. Not quite as dramatic as the others, but, you know, gets the point across. Because Gold realizes that they need the actual page, because Regina's picture somehow shows magic on the photo. So the way the glare comes up, it's magic, so that now Gold knows that the page is required in order for them to get to the sorcerer, or to the author, and that he's trapped within the page. So, their mission now is to go and retrieve the page. Maleficent puts everyone to sleep, and her and Gold have a really interesting chat, and she tells Gold that, you know, she wants to change her deal with him. That she wants her deal to know, she wants to know what's happened to her daughter. And that she will help him and fulfill what he wants, but she wants to know more about her daughter and she wants to know it kind of like now. So they kind of move on. And I'm sorry, but Gold is like ridiculously heartless in this. Like, he really, I was kind of all done with him. When they go to look for the page, they realize it's not there, and the only person that could have taken the book, because anyone who's been under a sleeping curse before isn't asleep. They can remain awake. So Snow, Charming, Henry, technically Aurora, if she's still kicking around town somewhere, none of those people would sleep because they've already been under a curse, so therefore they're immune.
Yeah, so I think Aurora's just pumped that her baby's finally sleeping for, like, a time. She's like, oh, he's down.
Oh, my God.
He's down. And he's just walking around, like, it's doing so dishes sad. And stuff.
Free time! So from there, we kind of, like, Gold says some really horrible things about Henry and how they're just going to get the book. And, like, it's like Henry doesn't even matter. Henry's his grandchild. And to him, it was like it was nothing. So I had a really hard time with Gold and that whole scene and how hard, like, he just came across so heartless. I don't know, what did you guys think about Mr. Gold at that time?
There's almost nothing that Rumple will do at this point that surprises me, to be very honest. So
yeah, especially when he went to see Belle when she's, like, sleeping, who magically fell asleep on another lovely pile of pillows. She's really good at going to sleep on top of pillows.
Like, it's very convenient.
Yeah, it just breaks my heart every time Henry means nothing to him. Like, this is not the first time that he's been, you know, ready to throw Henry to the wolves. And it's like, does it mean nothing to you that he's a product of Neil? Like, come on. Like, use your brain here. It just, every time he does it, my heart breaks a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I don't know, it just bothered me. It made it even worse, though, because I think for a while, Henry and Gold kind of connected and bonded a little bit, but everything in Gold is just terrible. And what was he saying to Belle? Like, I was trying to figure out, like, what he was talking about with Belle, and he made some really odd statements about how the rules are changing, and he will try to take her with him.
Yeah, and he was saying something about, like, he needs to, like, work faster, because, like, time isn't on his side, but I guess those were just, like, little, like, Easter eggs, sort of, that you have to, like, remember later on.
Well, it made me think about, like, the happy endings, mm-hmm. and how if he gets his happy ending, you know, she's not a villain, so how could it be hers? Like, I'm thinking that was the only thing I could think of that he meant. Maybe it's something completely different and it's supposed to be an Easter egg, but that was originally where my brain went.
Yeah, I don't, it's just, it was a weird, there was something very odd and weird about those statements that I just, they stuck out to me. So I was like, And now really, is Belle his happy ending or is Mila his happy ending?
I wonder if his happy ending is realizing the error of his ways and actually liking himself first, because I don't think he gets anywhere until he does that. Like, I don't think Gold or Rumple, however you want to say it, can find happiness with anyone until he wants to not be the coward and truly love, like, forgive himself his mistakes and love himself. Like, I feel like that's almost what his happy ending is the reason he can't find his happy ending with a person is that he is so totally screwed up as a person and he truly considers himself to be unlovable. That's why this is all, like, screwed up. That's, at least that's my thought on it. Like, everybody else, as flawed as they were, I think they kind of loved who they were. Like, that, like, of their problems, that wasn't one of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, that definitely does. I was actually looking when he was talking like this, because I really had no idea what he was talking about. I was kind of, like, looking at his face, because I thought maybe his skin was starting to get, like, weird again, like it was in the Enchanted Forest, but it wasn't. It was just me trying to find something that wasn't there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all a very strange thing. It feels bigger than just that. I don't know. We'll have to see. Then we have some more action where Regina and company find Henry, and Henry's just about to blurt out that he's found the key, and he realizes it's Regina and her evil sidekicks. So he's forced to give her the page, and she speaks very harshly to him, but they have kind of like this silent communication, and he gives her the fake page, and he's hidden the real page. And all along, he also has the key in his pocket that's required to release the author.
Right. The evil eye glare. I was like, oh, so what's the super secret signal that we're using now? Because she was so good at it last week, not, you know, and I was like, you know, I was like, what is it this week? So, like, when she said, you know, Henry Daniel Mills, I was wondering if maybe Daniel really wasn't his middle name there for a minute, or if there was,
no,
like,
I think
some sort
it
of
is.
It obviously is, but I was just wondering if she was going to give him some sort of like sign. No, it was just a eye glare and a eye, you know, glare and eyebrow raised was apparently his big clue.
He got the vibe. He knew where that was going. So from there, they take the fake page and Henry hides and waits for Snow and Charming to show up. Now, again, in their cray-cray state, Snow and Charming show up, and Charming actually, like, snaps at Henry because he wants to release the author and has told him about the key and everything else that's happened, and Charming's horrible to Henry and basically sends Henry packing and is like, oh, the adults will take care of this, which is not a good idea because, seriously. So their plan is, in all of its genius, is that they will just burn the page that the author's in because they don't want to have to deal with the consequences anymore. So if they burn the page, they can't rewrite Emma's story, and that'll be that. Although it will ruin Regina's happy ending and she'll not get it, and it'll kill somebody with inside the page. So they're really willing, like, Charming is at the fire pit ready to light this page on fire. Were you guys surprised that he was willing to go so far?
I was surprised with him just in general. Like, when he snapped at Henry at first, I was like, oh! Like, I was taken aback. Like, because, I mean, Mary Margaret's gone off the deep end a couple of times. Like, she has, like, her moments, especially in the Enchanted Forest scenes. So, like, for him to snap at anything was, like, very off-putting.
Yeah, but he always manages to keep his cool, and he just lost it tonight. Like, I was surprised too. Every time he snapped at Henry and is like just willing to basically murder this author and stick him in the fire, like, I'm like, are you still you? Like, are you sure you're okay? Because something just felt really, really wrong. I was like, that this isn't Charming. Like, come on.
I think it goes to highlight that anyone could be a villain given the specific situation. Because they were going to be villains by what they were going to do. They weren't going to, even though Regina's been working really hard undercover and doing all these things, they weren't going to allow her to have her happy ending because they wanted to save themselves. And that's what a villain does. A villain is selfish.
Yeah.
So I think it kind of highlighted that point really well with what they were doing, you know, the behaviors that they were showing. So in the end, though, Snow does realize that it's wrong of them to burn the page. And she does cite that, you know, Regina held their secret and Regina's been doing all these things, and how can we take her happy ending away from her? Like, how could we do that to her because we're being selfish and we're, you know, we're doing things for us. And so they go back and they have a talk with Emma. And I can't say it's a good talk. I can't say that it goes well. What I found really interesting was they chose to have the talk at Granny's in public. I thought that was weird.
I thought they were at the loft.
Were they?
Yeah, because everyone at Granny's is still
asleep. Never mind.
Well, are they? Because Hook and Emma are up.
Right. So
They get them up. Don't they wake them up?
I don't know. So just, we don't get the explanation. All we do is see the aftermath of it, really. Yeah,
but I thought they were at the loft.
Maybe they were. Maybe they were at Granny's another time. Anyway, either way, it was still, like, I really would have liked to have to see them explain it, and we didn't get to see that. So we don't really know the extent to what they told them, except, I mean, we can kind of guess because of Emma's reaction. But at the same time, I think I would have liked to see that scene played out a little bit more.
Yeah, because I think I remember when they get when they actually get the author out, or they're about to, Emma's like, I need some answers now too about how things are written.
So did it not seem like a colossally bad idea to, like, anyone else that you did not want to let this dude out? Like, as
yeah.
Like, he's telling the story. Like, August is telling the story of how there's you know, the author isn't just the author, it's a job, not a person, which I thought that was, like, the coolest concept.
Yeah, ever, but, and they write a man named Walt.
Yes. Oh, that was the second time my husband groaned. Like, he
yeah, that was a little obvious.
Pillow during that. He was not happy. But, like, the whole thing of this guy and how he manipulated, and because he manipulated things, they chose to imprison him, and they were taking away kind of his author privileges, like they got him to drop his quill or whatever. Like, at what point did it seem like a good idea to let this dude out? I mean, I just don't understand what they were thought they were accomplishing by letting this guy out.
Or why not let him out in a secure location, like a prison cell?
Right.
Just in case.
Just saying.
Just in case. You can always let him out of the prison cell if he turns out to be a good guy.
Exactly.
But, you know, take some precautions.
Yeah, because the story that August was telling did not lead me to believe that this man was good in any way.
No, this guy was in prison because he got punished, and this whole story of who he was and why, I mean, I was like, no, do not let this man out.
Plus we like don't know what stories he manipulated, because he said he got in trouble for changing and manipulating stories, but we don't know which ones he did, so you don't know what he wrote.
So I think part of it was probably manipulating Maleficent's story, because he seemed to kind of have a grudge against Maleficent, and then he sent the Charmings off to the Sorcerer's Apprentice, because the Sorcerer's Apprentice says, you made me do this, and now it's time for you to be punished. So that whole stealing the egg and everything, that was not part of an original story. That was something that the author wrote, because it would be more dramatic.
Which kind of makes sense, because if you think about, like, I was thinking about this while watching it. Like, it kind of changes the tone of everything that we saw in seasons, like, 1 through 3, when they show the flashbacks of Snow near the end of her pregnancy, right before the curse hits. Like, you never had any of that doubt or, like, upset time or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there was nothing ever, like, laid in that, but it makes sense if that story was changed.
Right. So, it's just really... But why Maleficent? What is his deal? Why pick on the strongest sorceress in all of the Enchanted Forest? Why pick a fight with her and change her story? So I wonder if there's something between him and Maleficent that made him make that choice. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like there's something more to it.
Yeah. So I don't. If it involves getting the most well-known heroes involved in her story.
Right. I also wonder if he's the one that wrote in the curse. Because somebody has to write that part of the story, right?
Yeah,
it's not just...
He could have.
I'm not misinterpreting that. That's part of the story, so...
Yeah, I mean, he could have done anything. Like,
right, so he could have made Regina evil because he got Daniel killed.
Yeah.
I mean, God help him if he did that, because that's not going to end well for him. At all.
Although it would make relations between Regina and Snow better, because Snow would feel like it wasn't really her fault.
Yeah, but I think they're at a good place right now.
Two
of them have kind of healed that over. So I'm super curious to know what he possibly could have changed and manipulated. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's so much that could have been altered by him. And it could go in any given direction, so... It'll be interesting. Interesting to find out as this unfolds a little bit more. So, in the end, we have Gold realizes that Regina has given him a fake page, and he kind of knew that she had been lying all along, but he needed something to call her out on. So, the fake page is what he calls her on. They knock her out, and then they bring her to her, vault. And they have her in the vault. And then Rumpel makes the statement that she'll do whatever he wants because he has something that she desperately wants, which Robin, I think we all know is going to be Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that man. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because the previews for next week look really interesting. I saw Robin on a white horse in the middle of New York City, maybe? Possibly?
Yeah, and then we have the Wicked Witch of the West coming back. There's a lot
going on. Yeah, that was very cool.
Dude,
and I saw the Popsicle Wife. She was in there, too.
Yep, I did see her.
The who?
Yeah, the Popsicle Wife.
Oh, my.
Marion.
Oh, I'm like, what? I'm sorry. I was so confused for a second. I didn't see her. That's why I was confused. I'm like, I didn't see her. Anyway, so We have that. We have, I don't know, there's just, so, and of course the author runs off and gets away at the very end, in case we didn't mention that, because really, why would any of this be easy now that the cray-cray man is on the loose? Mm-hmm. Now, my biggest concern is all he need is a quill to start to write again and to create stories?
And there's all those blank books. No,
I think it's a magic quill.
In the
specific quill.
Right, but is there one kicking around in Gold's shop that we don't know about?
Probably in a drawer somewhere.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hey, I don't think it's that he can't obtain one, but I think he does need a specific item. I don't think he can just whip up a Bic and start,
No. It definitely looked very specific. I was trying to tell if it had, like, mouse ears on the top of it, because I thought it did, but I don't know.
My God, if we have to start looking for hidden Mickeys in Once Upon a Time, it's not going to be pretty.
We've done that before. They have them before.
I know. My husband will just, like, you'll hear the roar.
Don't tell him. Just don't.
I know.
So here's my question. Is somebody writing their stories now? Was that author replaced?
No, I don't think so. I would feel like it has to be, like...
Because they said it was a job. And there was always someone writing the stories to give to the man named Walt.
But the sorcerer the sorcerer's apprentice was captured. And I feel like he would have to do the bidding for the sorcerer to find a new one. So he's still in the hat.
Right, but he was in the hat long after, this author was put in the page.
Mm.
Because that author was put in the page before the curse. So who wrote the curse? Is it something he already wrote and it had to play out? Did someone else write it? Like, did they just have a vacancy in the job of author? Like, and how long? And you know what I mean? So what happens at the time if no one's writing the stories? How do the stories come about? Because they're supposed to be writing, well, I guess technically they're supposed to be writing the observations, like not the manipulations. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, but somebody had to write the observation of the curse.
And August knew how to manipulate it.
To some extent, yes.
And August had the book, so it makes me wonder if maybe he knows who, like, took over for him, if there was an author, like an interim author, while this guy's locked up. Because he's happened to know a lot about this for a guy who the other author was locked away. Like, who did he learn all of this from? The sorcerer?
Adam.
Or the sorcerer's apprentice? Yeah.
Possibly. I don't know. So it's a couple more questions, I think, that really need to be answered, again, about this author business. But I like that we know the job of the author. I think that's a really cool way to do it. I don't know. I enjoyed that part quite a bit. So
I also feel like that explains how you can weave characters like Frankenstein and the Wicked Witch of the West into all of this, is that, like, authors throughout the generations have included their stories. Like, I think that's a really cool way to tie all of that together.
Yes, it makes it much more wide open and much more accessible to bringing in other things. When you know that someone can, it's not just an observation, someone could manipulate it by bringing in these other things. So I don't know, that was pretty cool.
Is the curse in the storybook?
I thought it was in the beginning.
I'm going to go back and watch. Like, I'm not doubting you. It could very well be. I just really don't remember.
I couldn't be misinterpreting, but I thought it was. Eventually, like I thought that... Remember there were pages that were being added to it?
Yeah.
Like, somebody had to... Emma's story ended up in there with Hook as a princess. Mm-hmm. How did that get there? Someone was writing it. Or observing it and writing it.
Yeah. But who...
But was it the author? Because if she went back in time, was it the author during that time that wrote it? So because someone observed her in the past?
But if the curse was in the book, then Henry would have been able to figure it out when he had the book.
Yeah, maybe I'm misunderstanding. Yeah, maybe I could be wrong. It's very likely. But I thought there was something about it in the book that came about later. It wasn't always in there.
Yeah, it might have come out once the curse was broken, like, and because, they remembered it could have
because
been
they talked
there.
About Emma being the savior, and I thought that was in the book.
Uh-huh.
Because I know the scene where Regina threatens them at the wedding is in the book, because I remember them, like, morphing from the drawing into the scene, so I know that part's there.
And that's what I keep thinking, that there's a scene where it morphs from the page of the book into what she's done. And maybe I'm thinking about that Regina scene, maybe that's what it is. But there's something in there, and there's the whole stuff about Emma being the savior in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they do this and who the author is. If there's more than one author right currently, you know, what August's role really is in it. I feel like there's so many more questions. But I feel like tonight's episode was really strong and it gave us some pretty good answers to some of the questions, and then just gave us more questions.
I didn't have this many questions when I first watched it, but now I have so many questions.
Sorry, I tend to do that. That's good. So, and then lastly, of course, we know that Emma's friend Lilith is Maleficent's child. Now, Lilith, in like lore and like from the Bible and stuff, is actually a name that's related to demons. She's like the queen of the demons or something like that.
Right.
So that ought to be interesting.
And that has been weaved into a lot of vampire tales throughout the years too. So that's all sorts of things.
I mean,
fairies too. Fairies.
Yeah. I mean, even C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and Wardrobe series, like Lilith is the evil being in there, and even down to even the joke of the old TV show Frasier, the idea that Frasier's ex-wife's name was Lilith. Like that was, I mean, that was like very deliberate, you know. So yeah.
True Blood used Lilith quite a bit. That was
she was the queen of the fairies, right?
Well, no, she was the one that all of the like vampire high council like worshipped. That was the blood of Lilith, and they were all obsessed with.
Yeah, there's a couple of different like lores that go along with her, so it'll be curious to see which one they go with.
Right. I mean, bottom line, none of them are positive. Like, just
no. Lilith is not a happy, sunshiny girl, let me tell you.
It's like, yeah, exactly. So none of this leads to any good.
No. So it'll all be very interesting to see who and how this all works out. So do you guys have anything else for this episode?
I'm very excited for 2 weeks from now.
Me too.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Because next week the Ten Commandments is on, so no Once Upon a Time.
No, it's Easter Sunday, so it's all about...
This isn't really a crack theory, but it's like a crack wish, I guess. I think it would be really cool if this series or whatever, if when it comes to its end many seasons from now, if Henry ends up being an author.
I was thinking that Henry should become the next author. I was thinking that. Because, like, again, it's all about him being connected to the book.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So I just think it's super cool. All right, so in 2 weeks from now, we will be discussing the next episode of Once Upon a Time. Until then, I'm Jen.
I'm Brittany.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.